What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Encourage and Inspire podcast. I'm your host, Rel Pete, and as always, we're here to empower, encourage, and inspire change through authentic conversations with leaders, creators, and innovators who are making a difference in the world of music and entertainment. In today's episode, I'm excited to sit down with Jack McCarthy, who's the co-founder of NDX, a marketing agency that's redefining what it means to be independent in today's music industry. Jack and his team have helped countless of artists transform their careers, building real fan relationships, mastering direct-to-fan sales, and creating sustainable revenue streams outside of the traditional label systems. We're diving deep into what truly means to own your own audience, how to build a loyal fan base that actually supports your music, and why understanding data and marketing can be just as powerful as making great songs. Whether you're an artist, a manager, or a creative entrepreneur, this episode is packed with gems that can help you take your brand and business to the next level. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take down some notes. This is episode 103 of the Encourage and Inspire podcast, featuring my special guest, Jack McCarthy of NDX. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. Let's go. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Encourage and Inspire podcast. This is episode number 103, and I have a special guest today. He is the co-founder of Indiepreneur or NDX, former musician, music, and now I'm a music marketing and music business strategist, all those kinds of things. I got my friend Jack McCarthy. How you doing today, man?
Hey, Darrell. Good to be here. Thanks so much for having me, man.
Man, it's a pleasure, man. I was saying before we started recording how I think your assistant found my podcast through one of my previous guests, and she's like, "Yeah, man, you really got to get on." So I was like, "That's really cool," because that lets me know that people are finding value in what I'm sharing and talking about. And that means so much. That means so much to me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And when Daisy reached out and let me know that she had connected with me, with you, I was super pumped to join you on the show. And she had shared some of the topics that you had been talking about on the podcast with your guests. So super, super grateful. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's absolutely a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure. Yeah, man. So let's start, man. So, kind of tell me about, I would like to ask this question. Like, what was your first introduction to music? What do you remember, like, as your first, you know, introduction to fall in love with music?
Man, it goes way back. I love to tell this story. I mean, I've been a musician my entire life. I started playing guitar when I was 9 years old. But my earliest introductions to music were actually with my grandfather. I would listen to Frank Sinatra tapes in his blue Buick in my grandparents' driveway. When I would go over there with my mom and dad, I would just sit with him for hours and listen to Frank Sinatra in the car, not go anywhere. We would just sit and listen, and then on the other side of things, I would listen to like Motley Crue and Judas Priest and bands like that with my uncle. So I was getting kind of a wide range of music education from a very young age. This was as early as like 3 or 4 years old. And then I got into Michael Jackson as a kid. I loved Michael Jackson. And then I got into punk rock music, and I started playing in punk bands and pop punk bands from a young age since then. But yeah, Frank Sinatra with my grandpa was my earliest introduction to music, and it's a fond memory, you know, burned into my soul.
I love it, man. I love to always ask that question because I think it's important. I think it's important to ask that question because, you know, people need to know about where it starts. We can get into the weeds of the business and all the other stuff like that, but it's got to start with a genuine love. I think for me, having a disability, but always, but never really had dreams of being in the music space. I always like to say the music industry found me. I did not find it. It wasn't a passion from an early child. But what I love about the music industry, and even more about the music business, is that it's about people and relationships. And that's what those are two things I know that I'm good at. I'm not good at a lot of things, but I'm good at those two things. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, man. So when did you kind of decide, like, I want to take this thing and be a professional? Like, so what was kind of that journey like? Did you like kind of chase the record deal early on, or trying to get to a label, or like how did that work?
Great question. Really, really kind of interesting and weird, twisty, turny journey as many, people in the business experience, I'm sure. So I, like I said, I've been playing in bands since I was really young. I did a lot of work playing in bands when I was in high school, and I actually got into recording at a very early age as well. I started recording music on, four track cassette and cassette recorders, and then I had like original like digital Porta Studio analog units, and then got into Pro Tools and things like that when I was a teenager. And I actually ended up going to college for music production, thinking that I was going to be doing more production work and studio work, and I still do that from time to time. But that was really where I started to look professionally into like what do I want to be doing in music, alongside doing like the artist and the band thing. And it wasn't until after college, right after I had graduated college, I was actually doing some work on tour as like a guitar tech and a touring guitar player as well, that I found myself kind of wandering into social media marketing. Strangely enough, I was doing production work out of a home studio, just kind of doing that and doing touring to make ends meet and kind of find my way in things. And I started doing some social media consulting, actually, for a charity, completely outside of music. It was totally random. I was looking for work. I needed something to make money, and I wasn't making a ton of it with producing and between touring and things like that. It was kind of feast and famine. And I got into doing social digital marketing consulting with a nonprofit. They ended up being my first client, and I kind of found my way into this world that way, cut my teeth in digital marketing, and then married the two when I met Circa, my business partner here at Indiepreneur, and he was starting the fledgling company. I actually was one of Indiepreneur's first customers. That was how I found the company. I saw an ad and he was running it, and I was like, oh, this dude seems like he knows what's up. He reminds me of me. We should probably talk. I'm gonna buy his stuff. And so I did, and then probably about 8 months later, we had, kind of struck up a friendship, and we're following each other's journeys and ended up partnering up on this thing together. And the rest is kind of history. The company's been around since 2017, so we're coming up on we're in our 8th year of business, I guess that makes it, which is cool. But yeah, it's been a weird, wild, sort of twisty, turny kind of journey to where I ended up today. Really not what I would have expected at all.
Gotcha. It's usually like that in this journey. I mean, I know for me, having, like you said before, having a disability, but when I've been in the industry since 2000, let's say 2006 and 05, but really like really heavily in 06, but had been doing this for a while, did some things with a few artists, but then when I went to Full Sail University, it's kind of like a restart to get my degree in entertainment business. Like, I knew that I couldn't leave Orlando, and because I had just you just have limitations, things you just know you can't do, so I had to figure it out. So the journey is so, and I've been fortunate to like have been to 10 different countries around the world and been featured in 20 magazines and been helping artists, really pretty much since in this form of with Dublin Management Marketing Group. And I like to call myself a consultant, right? Because I wanted to start out being an artist manager, and I realized after thought that artist management is like really thankless.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And so it's just a thankless, and most people who start out wanting to be managers really figure out that like, okay, like very few artists are going to even make enough money to even, or you can even draw a commission off of them. You know what
Right.
I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like, so a lot of us rather just be consultants or work in some kind of other capacity, advising, whatever you want to call it, because you're always the one to get blamed when something doesn't go right. It's the manager's
Well,
fault.
I always feel for my manager friends, and our clients and their managers, where they wear so many different hats, you
You
know.
have to,
They wear so many different hats, and they're expected to be experts in areas where they really shouldn't be. In a lot of ways, they're expected to do the things of every department of an artist's business, and it's really gotten maybe a little out of hand.
Well, it's interesting. The whole trend now with the manager has really become the new record label. Now, if you, I'm sure you've noticed that kind of as an industry's trend, where like the managers are now doing what the record company's jobs were.
Yep.
And so record, because it used to be, the manager would get 20% of your overall generated income. Now, managers want to be business partners. They want to have equity. They
Right.
want to own, because they don't want to do all that work. And then you decide, you as an artist decide they decide they want to go in a different direction, and now the managers, now what are they supposed to do? Because they've invested all this sweat equity of not getting paid a whole lot, and now that artist, you've helped that artist build something, they want to now go somewhere else. So they always think the grass is greener on the other side.
Right.
Oftentimes it isn't, but they think that it is.
Yeah.
So managers really want to become more partners now, and are willing or want to make more of an investment to have a stake in the whole thing, if that makes sense.
It definitely
And
makes sense.
I
And
think that's the trend that's going on right now, actually.
it's really interesting you say that, because actually, like, a lot of the work that we do at IndieX with our clients at the agency side of Indiepreneur, most of the time, when we're, in talks with an artist to work with them on their marketing, it's even for label artists, it's not happening from the label connections or a label liaison necessarily. I mean, in some cases it is, but in many cases, I would say most cases, the connecting point is actually the artist manager making that bridge over to us as like the third party agency that they're working with, as opposed to, a label vendor type of situation, which is often what you think about being the case. But more and more, we've been seeing it really, the direct connections are coming from the managers, kind of going into that role of being the connecting piece to all of the different areas of the artist's business for them.
No, that's so true. That's so true. And I think that I've always looked at the managers kind of being like the overseer of everything. And don't necessarily have to,
Yeah.
like I said before, I happen to be the expert, because I'm not an expert in everything. And I think when it comes to management, and we'll jump off this in a second, but managers have different skill sets. Some managers are good A&R guys. They're in the studio. They know music real well. Some managers are, they're the ones that's gonna go out there and get the brand deals, gonna get out there. Some like me, I'm a connector, I'm a facilitator. So everybody has a different skill set. And I think artists gotta find, creatives got to find the manager that suits what it is that they're looking for. And obviously these days, what music marketing is probably the what most creatives struggle with the most, clearly. You know what I'm saying? Like, how to build a fan
Yep.
base, because that's usually, that's the era we're in now, is how to build a fan base. Now, I do believe, like, what I teach What I show my clients is that it's about building a core audience. That's really how you, that's the only real way you kind of sustain is to have that core, is to have that niche audience. And I think, and it's okay. It might not, and it doesn't have to be a large audience. It just has to be one that's super engaged and locked in, if that makes sense.
Definitely, yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, so much of what we do at our company is founded on that idea of owning your data, owning your audiences, making sure that it's something you have control over, from really from end to end, so that you've got channels that you can communicate with these fans that eventually become customers, really valuable to you as a business, even if there's only 100 of them, 1,000 of them, 10,000 of them, whatever it might be as it starts to grow. Yeah, absolutely. It really is about building that core. You know, it's thinking about an artist business like any business thinks about growing. You grow by having customers, right? The music business, I feel, for in a lot of ways has gotten it backwards, where it's just like, oh, let's just get as many people as possible sort of interested and hope to keep their attention, and then it stops there, as opposed to thinking like a business, where it's like, well, businesses need customers. Customers are the lifeblood of a business. And a fan is a really great pathway to build an amazing customer relationship, because these people like you, they like what you do, and they're probably captivated by the art that you're creating. Hopefully, if you're making great stuff and people are becoming fans, I would hope they're captivated by it.
No, for sure. I think, you mentioned and you talked about that. That was actually one of my questions, artists needing to think like a business and you mentioned customers. So let's take it even before that. Like, what are some of like those initial first steps to adopt that mentality? Because I think creatives naturally do not like to sell. They don't like to They hate that stuff, right? They just want to, if they had their way, they would just want to make songs. And don't get me wrong, Jack, don't get me wrong. It starts with the songs, though. It starts with the good material. I mean, because me personally, when I'm running in one of my ads that I run called the Music Exposure Campaign, and I do that because that's a way for me to get new people to come into my world at
True,
a
yeah.
cost-effective space, right? So one of the things I do is I have to pre-qualify them because I don't want to have, would it be great to have my schedule filled up with a bunch of meetings to sales calls? Awesome. But if they're not going to be stuff that I can actually work with and help, like what's the point, right? So you have to kind
Absolutely.
of qualify them. And what I realize is there's a lot of bad music out here. Because
Yeah.
I think unfortunately, being a creative, it's kind of become a hustle now, in my opinion. Like people are out here because it used to be in the old era to me, which I think was a good thing. You had gatekeepers. You had people that was like, you have to be at a certain level to even come into this exclusive club that we have called the music industry. You know what I'm saying? You had to be really good and
Yeah.
to even get through. And as much as we love the internet, what social media has been able to do for the independent creative, the independent, artist, it's also made to where there's 100,000 songs a day uploaded to probably more than that now, right? Just to Spotify
Yeah.
alone. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? And a lot of
Yeah.
those stuff is bad. A lot of it is bad. And I personally hear a lot of bad music. So I'm speaking from personal experience, like, how am I supposed to work with this? I can't
Yeah.
even do anything with them to even try to help them. So I don't know
100%.
if you want to speak on like some of those first initial steps. We know it starts with the song. We know it starts with the product. Without good
Well, I think
product, you can't do, what are we doing here? You got to have good product. You have to have songs recorded professionally, mixed professionally, good concepts, because it starts there. But your thoughts.
it definitely starts there. I mean, that's like one of it's like the prerequisite to any. It's the prerequisite to having fans, right? You have to have product that you have to have product that is great. You have to have great music, great songs, great recordings, and it's become easier than ever to have good product. Like, it's easier than ever to record great great sounding music. It's easier than ever to start building a fan base, but that doesn't mean that just because it's easier than ever in 2025 doesn't mean that everybody is great, you know? You have to, you do have to put in that work. And I think that's a really important part to kind of lay down as a precondition to anything before talking about marketing. Is like, I could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on marketing an artist that has bad music and they won't get a single fan, you know? Like, that's just not going to work. But I will say, like, once you accept that reality, and I hope every artist can, then the next thing that you do is you work to create, you work to take that creativity that you use to create the music itself, and you funnel that same creativity into making marketing materials for that music. And when I say marketing materials, I typically mean videos. Videos of you performing the music, short form content, if you want to call it that. Stuff that you can put on the internet in a variety of different ways, with a variety of different angles and hooks and settings and styles that you can use over time to try and get fans to lock in, to grab their attention, to pull their attention away from the scroll. Because once you can do that and you can learn how to do that repeatedly, then you know how to build an audience. You know how to cap, well, I like to call it capturing attention. There's really three stages to building a music business via growing a fan base and monetizing it. Is you create attention, you capture attention, and you monetize attention. Capture, creating
Oh, that's
attention.
awesome. I love
Thanks, thanks. It's, I
that.
mean, it simplifies it, right? It simplifies all the hard stuff that goes into marketing. It really just boils down to one of those three things. And so once you learn how to create attention with the great music that you make and the great content around it, then it's about distributing that as widely as you can go. And there's so many ways to do that. We have so much power behind us with social media, with Instagram, with TikTok, with all of the social media platforms and what you can do organically on those. And you can also obviously do a ton with paid advertising, which is a lot of what we focus on with our clients at the agency, especially when we're working on like the monetization end of things, which is primarily what we do on that side. But we teach a lot of artists, you know, who are doing it themselves or just getting some help in coaching and consulting, how to use the content that they've created to create massive exposure through paid advertising. You create that attention. Then once you've got it, it's about capturing it. It's about holding it. Keep those fans engaged. And that's just about how you show up online. It's making sure that you don't, making sure that you don't look like you're a ghost town when people go to visit your profiles. Making sure that when you're doing stuff, when you're in the studio, when you're on the road, when you're making music, you're talking about it. You're sharing the journey with your fans. And I think this is I call this the bridge piece. And this might answer the question that you asked me about, like, you know, for artists that aren't ready to sell, how do you talk to them about this? Well, I think it's this bridge piece of capturing capturing attention. It's sharing the journey with your fans, because that's the kind of stuff that makes fans that stick. They feel like they're a part of your world and that they're building with you. And when you can make fans feel like that's what's going on in you're building a community or a tribe, then when it comes time to sell something, whether it be merch or tickets to your shows or an album that you're releasing or whatever it might be, it doesn't really then feel like selling. It just feels like an exchange between friends. You know, it's no different than doing somebody who's done a lot for you a favor. This is kind of like the idea of the fan customer journey. It mirrors human relationships.
I completely agree. Like, the only reason why I always tell this to my clients, the only reason why people spend money with you is because they have a vested relationship with you.
100%.
And you're a problem solver. Like, one of the biggest things that creatives don't realize is like their music solves problems for people. Because that's ultimately what a business is, right? Somebody starts a company to solve a problem in the marketplace somewhere. And whatever industry it is, there's a problem there, and I'm gonna figure out a way to a product that solves that problem or service that solves that problem, and then it becomes supply and demand at that point, right? So I think with creatives, It's about why does my music, why do people want to keep coming back to my, coming back to what I have to offer? There's problems that are there for created for a fan that my music solves for them. And that's why they connect, you
Yep.
know?
Yeah, 100%. I love to say that like music solves existential problems, you know? It
Okay.
creates a it's a patch. It's a patch in the matrix of life where if
Right.
I'm feeling anxious, my favorite artists, my favorite bands, their music is the problem solver for that in some days. When I'm getting ready to, I don't know, think about anything that you've got going on in your life. Think about all the places where music has been a healer for you, or just a soundtrack for you. Music being the concept of music being a soundtrack to your life is kind of like cliche and a little weird. But if you think about it in terms of like problem solving, it kind of is that, you know?
No, I love that. No, it really is. I love what you're saying with that. It's so important, I think. And I think when you can kind of simplify it like that, it makes it easier because it's tough now. This is the best time to be in music, in my opinion, but it's also hard because you have a lot of people who are creative that don't just really know how to do this. They know they're good at least they think they're good at making a great song. But it's so much more than just making great. I hear a lot of great songs, but it's just way more than that. And I think if we can help somebody figure that out, because they got the foundation of a great song, but now how do they take it to the next level? And the truth of it, it costs a lot of money to do this, man.
Yeah,
It costs. I mean,
100%.
there's just no way around it. I mean, I heard Wendy Day. Rap called So Awesome. She's so awesome. Love Wendy.
Yep,
Never got to just
I love
talk
Wendy.
to her
She's
personally, but she's so
the
great.
best.
She's I hopefully one day I can get her on this podcast. That would be so awesome. But she says she's never been able to do it with, she works primarily with rappers, but she said for less than $150,000 liquid, which is in the grand scheme of things, isn't a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for the average person out there to have
Sure.
solely for their music career. So yeah, it's very, very expensive to do this career the right way. Now, if you don't have the money, you got to be really patient and really resourceful, and being able to, yeah, it's just gonna take longer.
Yeah. Yep. It's money or time. And oftentimes it's both.
For sure, for sure. Man,
You
let's
know,
talk about, go ahead. No, go ahead.
it's interesting. You mentioned something there that triggered a thought in my mind about
Okay.
you've got so many artists that are they have the foundation of a great song. If there's one piece of advice that I constantly find myself going back to for so many it's years now. It's like this is just a bug in my ear. Like it's the angel and the devil on my shoulder that's
Right.
constantly saying to me, like, if there's one piece of advice to give to artists, it's like you have such an unfair advantage compared to so many other kinds of businesses out there because you're creative and you can take that same creativity that you use to make your music and you can funnel it into every other piece of this business. You can funnel it into how you make videos for your music, how you create content to stand out online. You can funnel it into your merch and how you sell it. You can funnel it into how you create your tours and your routing and how you do things outside the box and the revenue streams that you build into your business. You can take all of that creativity and bring it into all different places in the business. You just have to think about it a little bit differently. And that's a challenge for a lot of artists, but it's one that I encourage every single artist and band that I meet. It's like take that and tap into it because that's like your superpower.
Yeah, no, I love that, man. I love that. Let's talk about before we get direct to fan, let's talk about the power of data. I think data is so, and kind of the basis of data, and how creatives, how creatives. I don't like to use the word artist. I like to say the word creative,
Sure. Yeah.
because I think art. Yeah, I think to see, we're in the era now on. Fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to see it, where a recording artist in the way we used to look at it is no longer the same.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
I think you're more now as a content creator that focuses on music. But the caveat with that is, and we saw this in during the pandemic, that record labels were signing content creators and trying to turn them into artists.
Yep.
And you can't do that. But you can, what you can do though, is try to help artists and teach them about content. And I think it's easier to do it that way. Trying to turn a content creator who has eyeballs and gets content, but they're not necessarily an artist and know how to captivate an audience, I think it's harder. That, and that's why you see a lot of those artists, those people that were signed and during that time, we haven't heard from any of them because you just it's harder to do in my personal opinion. But that's why I said I like to say the word content creator that focuses on music because you can't escape content. It's impossible. No, you can't do it without content. So that's the gas, right? Content is the gas to getting yourself out there.
Yeah,
You know,
100%.
you can do it other ways, but you better have a lot of money. You better have a
Yeah.
lot of money if you're gonna do it the other way.
Yeah,
So,
for true.
this way, yeah, it's really it's either gonna be content, like back to what you were just saying, time or money. So the time is the content. You got to be willing to do. But if you have money, you can kind of fast track it a little bit, but you still can't buy your way to success. Nobody can do that. Because if we could, we'd all do it. We'd all do it. You can't buy your way
Yeah.
to success in our in this space because people still have to like you. There still has to
Yeah.
be a connection of some sort there. So yeah. But let's talk about data, how important, how creatives should be looking at the power of data and how data can drive some of their decision making when it comes to using marketing and data and kind of marrying the two and how that helps them to drive decisions to know how to move the career along, if that makes sense.
100%. I'll share a couple stories about this that I think really hit it home. Years and years ago, one of our earliest clients at the agency was actually a legacy artist,
Okay.
filmmaker and actor. And he had, a long career in TV and in film and in music, and came to us and said, I've got fans all over the world. I just don't know how to consolidate them and get them all to one place. He had social media profiles, but all of his fans around the world definitely weren't connected with him there. And we spent a lot of time over many years since then helping him basically find and gather all of these fans that had been, over the years spread all over the place. Help them re-find him, re-engage with him online through the content that he was doing and the music that he was putting out and the new movies and the TV stuff that he was making, and helped him grow his online following from an existing fan base that was out there. They just, the data just wasn't all consolidated into one place. And it was a huge lever for him because then when the time came for him to be selling records, for example, or be selling movies, what we were able to do then was then tap into this warm audience that he had gathered to himself, that in his case had already been out there. It just needed to be, they just needed to be basically reintroduced. Once we were able to do that, all of these people were ready to go. Their hands were raised. They were psyched. And that's the power of what you can do with the internet and with data is you can aggregate your fans onto your social media channels, and then you can build an email list, then you can build a text list. You can have your customer data from your online store, like your Shopify store, and you can have all of those things talk to one another. There's so many platforms out there. We love email marketing platforms like Drip, for example, but there's tons of others. There's Mailchimp, that's a classic email marketing platform. There's tons of them out there. And you can combine all of this data into, a CRM, a customer relationship management
Manager.
tool, where you can look into and analyze what's going on with my fan base. What is What are people spending with me on average? How often are people buying from me? Where do my people live? How can I use that to inform where I should go on tour?
Right.
That is like the power of data from like end to end. It's about gathering your fans into places where you can communicate with them one-on-one, communicate with them in a way that's unique to how they've talked to you or engaged with you or been in relationship with you. You're not going to talk to a fan that's been to every show across the whole United States. You're not going to talk to them the same way that you're going to talk to someone who just discovered you for the first time, right? And
Yeah.
that's what you can do when you consolidate your data. But that's so missing in music still in 2025. It's still such a blind spot. And I'm just constantly waving the flag around, like data consolidation and the power that you have behind it when you really dive deep into that and work hard to consolidate it all and make sure that you can leverage it.
It's so important, man. Extremely important. Yeah, man. So, I think you broke it down perfectly. That data is so important when it comes to allowing creatives to make decisions to build their business. And again, because you don't have to have a massive audience to do well. I think, I mean, if you get 50,000 people, I'm sorry, I'm at this wrong. You get 500 people to spend $50 a year, that's $50,000, of revenue generated. $50 a year is not that much money. You know what I'm saying? So, but in order to get people to spend money, they have to feel vested into what you're doing. And I think that's the biggest thing. I think that artists and creatives have to really understand is, like I said, find those people and super serve them,
Yeah, absolutely. And then don't be afraid to offer them stuff. Don't be afraid to sell.
I was just gonna talk about that. Speaking of that, how can creatives identify and create irresistible offers or products that the fans actually want to buy? So why don't we talk about that?
Yeah,
Well,
yeah.
what is? Let's break that down. What would you say? What's the best of like an offer? When you say the word offer, what are we talking about?
Oh man,
And
this is a
don't give them.
topic
I
of
mean, don't give them everything, because some people have to. They have to. This is how you get paid.
this is a
So.
topic that it's a topic that's close to my heart, for
Gotcha,
sure.
okay.
When people hear offers, right, I think immediately the artist's mind goes to my products, right? But an offer isn't just your products. It's your products and the way that you're presenting them to people. For example, when you launch an album for the first time, let's say you've got 500 limited edition copies of your new record on a special, red splatter vinyl, and you're signing and numbering them, and each of those is going to have a different variant cover art, and it's only going to be available for the 14 days before you go on tour to start promoting this new record. And again, there's only 500 of them available, and they're priced at a little bit more than what the standard vinyl in your store is. And you're calling that the launch day super special. I'm gonna just give it a silly name. There's an offer, right? It's a product with some urgency behind it. There's a time element, there's some scarcity to it. Because there's only so many of them available. It has some exclusivity. It's a bit differentiated in that it has a different color. It's unique in that there's a different cover art for it, and it's exclusive and premium. You're hand signing them and numbering them. These are the kinds of things that make products into offers, right? You take a product and you put urgency around it, you put scarcity on it, you make changes to it, you change the wrapping, you put naming to it, you set bonuses around it. Sometimes, an offer might have, well, take the signature and the hand numbering. You're not going to do that for all of your releases, right? You're not going to do that for every vinyl you sell. You're not going to do that for every t-shirt you make. And so this is how you take products and turn them into offers. That's just one example, obviously. But there's so many ways you can do this. And again, this is kind of the beauty of the unfair advantage that creatives have, is you can take the same creativity that you used in the studio to make records to think about how you want to sell records and make them really cool. And that's something that, like, I've been really attuned to, even from like a young age when I didn't know anything about marketing. I was all about like the packaging and the cool thing. Oh, what if we had like one that was this color and one that was that color? And what if you made it so that when you look at the cover art with 3D glasses, it pops out at you and stuff like that? These are the kinds of things that make products unique and inherently make them more valuable than you mentioned, like irresistible offer, right? And what's cool about making irresistible offers is it positions you and separates you from all of the noise. It separates you from all the other stuff that's being sold out there. Hell yeah, I'm going to take out my wallet and pay $25 more for a vinyl from my favorite artist when it's got all of these additional things going on with it, and it's special and unique. And it's, I liken it to the. It's the gift shop at the end of the museum or the end of the experience. It's a commemoration of an experience that you're having with an artist or a creative that you like. That's what Powers offers. And that's why fans want to buy stuff from you. They want to have a piece of the memories that you're making with them. That's what selling does for you. That's what selling, especially physical goods, merch, physical music, so on and so forth. It does that for you, and it does that for your fans, more importantly. And it creates really amazing customer relationships where you can wow them.
I mean, and we're seeing more than ever now that people want physical product again. They want it. It's really we're people are so focused on streams, and that's cool. But being able to, people want physical product, being able to go direct to your fans is still going to be the best way to generate the most money. Because, unless you're having billions and billions of streams, it's going to be very difficult to generate like consistent revenue just from streaming by itself. So you have to be able, so all these things you're talking about is ways to generate revenue. And I had a question on here about, revenue kind of being a roller coaster, because it's difficult. Like it's difficult to consistently get people to open up their wallets and spend money on a consistent basis with you. So like, kind of talk about that perspective, like in terms of like, the practical ways. I mean, obviously merch, shows, things like that. But I think what I think artists should also be thinking about is what other skill sets they have. You know what I'm saying? As well, that can be tied to revenue generating. Like, can you give lessons? Like, what are you good at? And I think so many times people think about like only this stuff, only revenue generated strictly from the music. Like, no, you got these days, you got to be creative in how you can consistently, figure out how to get someone to give you a dollar.
100%, yeah. And you mentioned the revenue roller coaster. That's a phrase that I love. I
It's
talk
a
about
roller
that.
coaster for sure. I deal with it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a roller coaster all the
I
time.
talk about this with a lot of our artist clients at our agency IndieX, because at our agency we're mostly working with artists that have pretty sizable fan bases, well into the hundreds of thousands of fans. And what we've seen just in studying trends in the music industry and studying the marketing and analyzing the marketing of some of the biggest artists out there, a lot of times what we see is they rely pretty heavily on, streaming revenue, on brand deals and partnerships and sync and touring to be their main revenue sources in the business. And all of that stuff is good. But what's really interesting is e-commerce is kind of the neglected stepchild of
Gotcha.
revenue streams for artists of that sort of size and caliber. It sort of gets pushed off to the
Okay.
side and not paid a whole lot of attention to. And why it can help to smooth, I like to call it smoothing out the revenue roller coaster of,
Okay.
you launch a record, right? And your revenue spikes. You go on tour and your revenue spikes. You get a big brand partnership and your revenue spikes, and then it goes right back down. What you can do with direct to fan, direct to consumer, and e-commerce is you can be running promotional campaigns all throughout the year, just like any brand, just like any brand would do online. Look at your favorite companies that sell online. They're running promotions for every holiday. They're making up their own holidays, which, hint, hint, nudge, nudge to artists, you should totally do that. You should make You should celebrate the anniversaries of your record. You should celebrate the day that your band became a band, the band birthdays. You should do all that stuff, and you can sell things around it. You can run offers to your fans at that time, whether that be things as simple as running a flash sale in your store to launching a new product. You can do all that stuff. And when you do it consistently and you build a calendar up to do it over quarters and over years, what that does is the revenue that comes in during that stabilizes those peaks and valleys on the roller coaster. And so
I love that.
that's what we focus on for a lot of our clients at the agency who, they're in a position where they have a large enough fan base where it makes sense to be thinking about those kinds of things, and they've got the volume where they can tap into it, and it's going to really make a big difference. But I'll say that, like, every artist should be thinking this way, because whether you've got 10,000 fans or 100,000 fans, like, there's opportunity in all of these lessons for you to think about, well, not will this apply to me, but how will this apply to me, or how does this apply to me? And I think that that's like the key differentiator in how artists can think differently, is instead of being like, will this work for me, is think about, like, how can I make this work for me?
I love that. I love that. It's so true, man. Man, we can be here forever and a
I
day.
know, we're really nerding out. This is great.
But talk to me really. I want to talk to you a little bit about NDX. Talk to me like the type of people, like you said earlier, they come there and they have more larger fan bases, but you work with Grammy level winning artists, but you also work with obviously a lot of independent artists. Like, what are kind of some of the successes that similarities that you kind of see that kind of mirror both sides of it? Because of course, people that have, who have a larger base, versus the independent side, there's still similarities there that both parties have to kind of navigate through, or do you even see some challenges there on both sides that maybe that's a better question. Some similar challenges, maybe.
That's a really good question. I think there are definitely some of the similarities, I would say, between, like, at the agency, our most successful larger artists and our more successful, like, growing independent artists. Even if their audience sizes are different, take like a Grammy winner, like Brandy, for example. We worked with Brandy on her album launch for B7. Millions of fans. And then, take a smaller indie that maybe has 100,000 or a couple hundred thousand, or even less than 100,000. The similarities between those kinds of artists, I think, are that they are in a position where they're thinking about the fan relationship as a customer-based relationship, and not just faceless masses of people around the world. They're
I love
really
that.
there's a shift in thinking of your fans as
People.
customers. And I don't mean that in a transactional way. It certainly is, which is an important bridge to make. Because, like, a customer relationship is transactional in some ways, but almost going a step further of thinking like how when you start to think of fans as customers, you then start to think of what am I doing in my music business to serve my customers with the things that they want. And I think that's the key similarity from, bigger artists to smaller artists that see success is they shift their thinking into how can I do things? What can I create that my fans will love and engage with? And when I say serve, that's what I mean. How can I, what will serve my fans well? And what will they engage with and then want to buy? I think that's the biggest similarity. Never been asked that question before. That's a great question.
Well, I like that. I like that because you know what? Speaking of artists like Brandy, they come because they come from a very different industry, right? Versus what it is
100%.
now. So they have to learn in ways to me, they kind of have it harder because they're used to having full departments. They just have to go on the stage and do what they do. To then have to think about it from of like, how do I now create that customer relationship that used to just be somebody else's job. I just want to go make records. You guys handle everything else, and now they're forced to the artists on that level who get it, do not who make themselves. I don't even want to use the word give access to because I think there's a time when a celebrity because we're the celebrity of how we used to. Ray, because Ray Daniels talked about this. Being a celebrity by itself now doesn't sell records. Nobody cares if you're a celebrity because it's like we don't care. Like it's no mystery anymore. Celebrities don't have mystery. We don't care. Like it's a time where like you wanted to know about that. We don't care. People don't care now. So you just can't say I'm such and such and you should buy my stuff. Nobody. So you have to really think about it. The stories sell music. Like the connections, the podcast, the information, stuff that we didn't know about before. For somebody, I think is what makes the connection. Ray Daniels talked about when he watched the Cowboys documentary with Jerry Jones and found out all on Netflix and found out all this information that we didn't that you didn't know about the Dallas Cowboys and that whole journey makes you a fan of like, wow, I really liked them because like they got a chance to dive deep into some things that wasn't told. Those stories weren't told before. So I think stories now, and stories have always sold music, but stories now even more, which is why I tell artists, and I'm sure you do the same, is to document everything. Even if you don't use it all, document it, turn the camera on, you know what I'm saying? Do it the right way. But have people do know what they're doing when it comes to filming. Look, here's what again, you gotta be artists gotta be careful. And I tell this to one of my clients too, that he's an older artist, older creative, which I love working with some of these older cats because what's making a comeback now is that these older creatives, and they should not take this as a slight being older. If you know how to perform live, that makes a big difference because a lot of these younger artists are struggling because they were never taught how to perform and get people connected. So I think people want to see. This is why LL Cool J can still go on tour and people still want to see him performing songs that are 20, 30 years old, something. And because he knows how to put on a show, Busta Rhymes. These guys know how to put shows on, these legacy acts. Because that's the era that they came up with. The show, they had to be able to perform. Anyway, that's it. That's it.
That's such a great point. Fans like they expect when you go to see music live, you have expectations, right? Like you even if you've never seen the artist before live, like you have expectations because you've seen other artists live and you know what a crushing live show feels like. So there's expectations there, 100%. I love that.
So my point is, being a celebrity by itself doesn't just guarantee, oh, I'm afraid people are gonna care. Cause they don't. Look, we saw J-Lo. J-Lo was struggling. Nobody cares about her. Nobody cares about seeing Jennifer Lopez in concert. Nobody cares about any of that. And some of these artists they struggle how to navigate this new space because you know what I'm saying? And if you don't realize how to go and make those genuine connections with people, they don't care. Because also too, this Gen Z generation, they have a lot more other things they can do to go than rather than spend all their money at a concert. They have a lot more distractions. It used to be where like concerts were the main thing, like, and now some of these concerts are so goddamn on expensive. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people are spending a couple $1,000 back to go to a Beyoncé, a couple grand. People are like, to go to a concert. And don't get me wrong, those are some of her diehard fans, but people, concerts are expensive now. You know what I'm saying? So they're not cheap to go to a concert. You're gonna get no $20 tickets anymore to go
No,
see a concert.
no, definitely not, definitely not,
So
definitely
yeah.
not.
So somebody.
I went to a festival 2 years ago, and it was a lot of bands that like I grew up. You know, I would go to the Warped Tour, and I would pay like 20, and I would pay $20 to see most of these bands. And I went and saw a festival 2 years ago, and it was like, I think it was like $350 a ticket. So, you know, it was for two of us, it was like a $700 weekend, or and it, that was for one day. And I was like, man, I used to see these bands for $20 in the parking lot, you know?
It's crazy because it's like that's it's almost unaffordable for the average person who just wants to go enjoy a concert. You can't, I mean, and we see that in all walks of life, how expensive things are, right? We don't have to jump through that rabbit hole, but when it comes to music, we jump down right that rabbit hole, but when it comes to music, it's like it's gotten so expensive, and some of these younger artists, because they weren't taught, because they come up through the social media era. I got followers, but they were never taught how to actually put on a great performance and get people to connect. And so it's showing when it comes to their tour dates, their tour shows, and like because they can't sell tickets, they can't put hard butts in the seats. At the end of the day, if you have a couple million followers across all your social platforms, not just one, if you can't sell, I'm talking about, a B. If you have a couple million followers across, you should be able to put, 5, 6,000 people into, especially if you have a name, you should be able to put 5, 6,000 people in the seat, but it's hard to sell hard tickets. Hard tickets these days are not easy to do. So.
Yeah, 100. We heard a lot of that, especially with the rise of like these kind of viral TikTok, you know, content creators that would pop up, get very famous online. There would be all sorts of hope that they could sell out a lot of shows, and they couldn't get 20 people in the door.
And that's what I was referring to earlier when I talked about during the pandemic, when you had all these labels were signing these artists who we've never heard of, by the way. Never heard of them. They get hot on TikTok, and it's like they're not around 3, 4, 5 years later because they're not, they haven't gone through the grind of. There's a grind aspect of this that we can't forget about. You got to go through the trenches of this grind. You don't get Nobody gets to skip steps because you blow up on TikTok.
Yeah, it's
Like,
true.
and I think it's so, for I think it's so, I won't say distasteful, maybe that's a good, but like to feel like you get to skip steps because you blew up on TikTok. You don't get to you get to not have to do what everybody else before you had to do. And I think it's just like you,
Short-sighted, yeah.
yeah. So, man, look, man, we could be here forever and be talking about this stuff. If people want to connect to you, if they want to, so let me ask this question. Like, in terms of the agency side, what is the ideal? Because of course you can't take on everybody, but if somebody wanted to come to you, like, what are kind of some of the prerequisites that they kind of have to have?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm
I want
glad
to
you
talk about
asked.
it. Yeah,
Yeah, I'm
because
glad you asked. Thank you. That I appreciate that. So at IndieX, like if you've got a big old fan base and you're trying to figure out how to monetize it, maybe in a new way or pick up some revenue that you're missing, if you've got, you know, 300,000 fans plus, I would say, across social media, it might be a good fit for us to talk, and you can learn more about what we do over at indiepreneur.io/about-indiex. You know, ideally, if you've sold some merch before and you're hungry and you think you could, you know, kind of ramp up the e-commerce game, that's really what we specialize in,
Okay.
and helping artists do that. So yeah, if you've got, you know, looking at that like 300,000 to 500,000 fan base is usually a good starting point for the types of folks that we can help the most at the agency. If you're not there and you're like, oh, this is so interesting, I love what these guys are talking about. If you want to learn more about this stuff, we have tons of opportunities for teaching and allowing artists to learn this kind of stuff, both from like a community standpoint and from a coaching standpoint, both in Indie Pro and in Indie Founder, which are two other services within the kind of like wider entrepreneur circle. So you can learn more about those over at entrepreneur.io. And if you want to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at the Atlas Jack. You can shoot me a message. Don't be afraid or shy. I don't bite too hard. But yeah, I'd love to hear from you if you want to keep in touch. That those are the places to find me.
Wonderful, guys. Look, this has been a great episode. I want to thank Jack, and I want to personally thank his assistant for connecting us. And like I said before, it's always a blessing to know that my podcast reaches people that want to come and have a conversation with little old me.
Darrell, thanks so much for having me, man. This was a blast. I appreciate the awesome questions and getting to go deep and nerdy with you. This was super fun.
It was awesome, man, guys. This was awesome. And I'm looking forward to people hearing this conversation because I like to, to teach and share knowledge through stories and make a difference, right? This the Encourage Inspire podcast is about making a difference between creatives and people in general. And I think this episode was a great example of that, guys. So look, until next time, this is your host, Darrell Peart. I'm out of here. Peace.